You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Hi everyone, welcome to the SBS On The Money Markets podcast for this Wednesday, the 7th of January 2026, a day where the Australian share market rose only just up by 0.2%. We'll have the details with Alice Shen from Van Eck in a few moments. But first to the Bureau of Statistics, which said the headline inflation rate eased from 3.8% to 3.4% in November. The underlying rate, which the RBA closely watches, down to 3.2%. But both are still above its target band of 2 to 3%. Many households are feeling pressure because the price of essentials are driving inflation, housing, food and transport all up. Within the housing category, electricity climbed nearly 20% over the year, rents 4%, but that's down from 4.2%. Beef, chocolate and coffee prices have also risen significantly, while in transport, petrol is higher by about 3.5%, and so too maintenance and vehicle repair costs up by 5.1%. The ABS saying it reflects elevated levels of wages and operating costs. To tell us more about the inflationary environment and what it means for the Reserve Bank, I spoke with Pradeep Philip from Deloitte Access Economics.
Pradeep, what do today's inflation numbers say about the inflationary environment at the moment?
So, Ricardo, we know that the ABS has told us in the year to November, headline inflation dropped from 3.8% to 3.4%, and the Reserve Bank's preferred measure, underlying inflation, also came off a bit from 3.3% to 3.2%. So that's kind of good news at one level, but inflation still remains high. And so we expect the Reserve Bank to remain on high alert for the next few months. But we don't think that these figures give reason for rates to go up at its first meeting in February. And there are a number of reasons for that.
Yeah, so run through those reasons. Why not?
Look, we think there's still a shakeout in how these monthly figures kind of tell us what's actually happening in the economy more generally and in terms of inflation. The second is there's a lot of noise because electricity rebates that people have been receiving have been coming in and out and still having an effect on these numbers. And also the way we've measured this trimmed mean, this underlying inflation rate, has changed. And so it's going to take a little bit of time to work out. But importantly for the Reserve Bank, they're going to be in a situation, we're going to be trying to weigh up a couple of things. They're seeing this slight increase in inflation over the last little while, and they'll be worried about that. And on the other hand, they'll see an economy where there are green shoots in terms of economic growth, but probably not enough and not broad-based enough. And so they'll be trying to keep this balance when they come together for their meeting in February. And we know that there are some structural things. You see, what is driving inflation up in Australia are not necessarily all demand-related things, which interest rates are really good at dealing with. There are some structural things in our economy that are keeping prices higher than they should, and they're mainly on the supply side. So, for example, we know that housing has been a big driver of inflation. Well, we know the structural issue there is actually about housing supply, and there are measures that are being put in place to increase supply, but we've got to go harder and faster if it's going to have a bit of a deflationary impact on the numbers going forward. The second, of course, you know, Ricardo, there is, you know, a political debate about migration. But migration is all about getting skilled workers into this country. What we don't want to end up in is with some supply constraints on the workforce, which could have inflationary consequences. And so we're also seeing things like seasonal weather patterns that are affecting some of our food kind of items in the CPI. And the key thing we've got to watch out for is that we don't get a structural change in our weather patterns because of climate change starting to affect kind of supply and therefore price of food in the future. So there are some structural things in our economy that all of these inflationary figures kind of point to, you know, not the day-to-day figures, but if you look through these figures at what is driving them, you realize there are structural issues, and that should be the focus of policy effort if we want to deal with inflation more systematically going forward, and also to lift the growth potential of our economy. See, there is a lot of commentary about rates at the moment, and it's because some people have accepted that our economy has hit its growth capacity. Now we're growing about 2.2, 2.3%. Now there's no way we should be at capacity given the underlying factors in our economy. And so what we've got to do, the economic challenge for Australia, is to lift our productive capacity through more investment and to lift our run rate by being more productive. And that, with the inflationary figures, all points to dealing with the supply side of our economy.
Isn't the concern here, and we see it in the numbers, that it's the price of essentials that, as you pointed to, have driven inflation, housing in particular, rents. When we talk about food, it's those beef prices, and we're seeing coffee prices going through the roof. Transport, petrol's up around about, I think, 3.5% over the year. The cost of servicing a car also. So if we're talking about the potential, I guess, the market is anyway, for interest rates to rise to combat rising inflation, isn't it going to hit those lower income families more so?
Look, and that is true. And this is why, we can all talk about inflation kind of falling to 3.4%, but what individual households feel is something a little bit different to that. They're seeing the individual items of food and alcohol and transport fares, property rates all going up that seem to be higher than that 3.4%. School fees, with coming to the start of the school year, school fees jump, and they'll feel the inflationary effects of that. But what we've got to do is deal with the structural things. We can only get housing prices not going up as much or rents going up as much if we can fix the supply side of the economy. We can keep costs of doing business down a bit if we make sure that our labor market, right, is flowing well, that we've got the right skills, we've got the right amount of people, so that we're not getting wage inflation over time because we don't have enough skilled workers coming in. So we've got to deal with these underlying things that are driving inflation. Of course, some of the things that also are driving inflation, Ricardo, are things outside of Australia's control. They're happening because of geopolitical shifts taking place around the world. Supply chains are being disrupted because of geopolitics. That will, over time, have a bit of an inflationary effect if things don't go our way. So there are things within our control, and we should be working on that. And there are things that take time, and we should focus on that. But there are also some things that are outside of our control.
And in just wrapping up, so what are you expecting in terms of where interest rates are going? As I mentioned earlier, the market seems to be thinking that rates will rise eventually. Is that the case, that the likely move in interest rates will be up and not down, and when?
There's a bit of a whiplash effect going on in terms of commentary on inflation and interest rates. We seem to chop and change kind of by the day based on the latest bit of data. And that's not good for Australians in terms of understanding what's going on. Not great for the market either. We think the Reserve Bank will be on high alert around inflation because they are concerned about that. We know that from their minutes. But they'll also be worried about the economy. And so we think at their meeting in February, they might well just hold till they get more data on how the economy is going. Now, later this month, we'll get some data on the labor market and the December month inflation figures. But we think when the Reserve Bank gets together in February, they'll be trying to weigh up inflationary pressures and also those growth pressures. And we think they will hold in February, but remain on high alert.
That's Pradeep Philip there from Deloitte Access Economics. To the Australian share markets, the reaction, and the ASX 200 did jump following the inflation data. The S&P ASX 200 finishing about 0.2% stronger, 8,695. Nine of the 11 sectors on the index finishing stronger. Information technology the best, and materials. In fact, materials are rallying, the likes of gold and silver doing well today, copper hitting a record high, and nickel even surging the best in about 3 years. The worst performing sectors, energy on a falling oil price and financial stocks. So if we take a closer look at the best and worst performing stocks on the market today, Lynas Rare Earths, the best, up by 14.5% on the S&P ASX 200. Silex Systems up by 8.9%, and Iperion X up by 7.6%. The worst performers, some of those energy stocks, including Beach Energy off by 4.8%, Harvey Norman off by 4.9%, and Bellevue Gold, the worst performer on the 200, off by 6.4%. For more on the day's market action, including where she sees the key investment themes for 2026, I spoke with Alice Shen, Portfolio Manager at Van Eck. Alice, let's start with those inflation numbers. What's the market thinking this will likely mean for interest rates, especially at the RBA's first meeting in February of the year?
Yeah, we are pleased to see that the inflation has pulled back and the market jumped and had quite a bit of rally right after the announcement. But since then, it has moderated. But we do think this is a good sign and potentially just enough to keep the interest rate wolves at bay. And the outlook still is unclear at this stage, but we would think that it's probably on hold and the RBA will keep the economy on a tight leash this year.
What about investor sentiment? What's that like at the start of the year? Because what we're seeing are record highs in the US overnight, the Dow and S&P 500 in particular. Here, though, local investors are a little more muted. Why is that?
Yeah, that's right. The ASX trading activity has been relatively low ever since Christmas last year, and investors are probably all watching the CPI print today like a hawk to gauge whether the economy is still running hot or not. But we do think that the investors could potentially wait a bit longer to wait for more positive catalysts, because now in the US and in Australia, we are on a completely divergent path in terms of interest rates. And in Australia, there will be no chance of cutting this year at this stage.
Okay, let's talk about metals if we can, because that's one part of the market that's doing stupendously well. Copper, a new record. Nickel, the best gain in 3 years overnight. Silver and gold also climbing. What's behind all of this? And I guess one of the key questions is, can it continue?
Yeah, I think it is a twofold answer. First of all, it's probably from the surging interest coming out of China that turbocharged the metals market. And secondly, there are chatters around the US potentially putting on more tariffs on base metals or refined metals. That's probably the reason why a lot of the businesses might have to scramble to stockpile. That's probably another reason why the metals market rallied. But I do think that for the base metals such as copper and aluminium, the structural demand is there. If we look at the AI and data center rollout, they do need a lot of copper and aluminium to build out. And also in terms of energy storage, you also need the likes of lithium and nickel to support this sort of infrastructure. So the demand will be there to support the prices. But also on the precious metal side, on gold, we are also very overweight in the gold space, because if we look at the global currencies, there's no winning currencies apart from gold. A lot of the central banks have been buying gold relentlessly over the past 2 years. If we look at some of the largest economies in the world, like China and India, they are not dollar-centric, and dollar has been relatively weak. So we think this will be a driving force for gold prices this year as well.
It's still early in the year, so corporate news is quite thin. Yesterday, we spoke in detail about that huge potential takeover of BlueScope Steel by SGH and a US steel company. What about today? Any company news that you're keeping an eye on?
Yeah, I think Intel is an interesting one. Just this week, they actually showcased a new series of laptops in CES, which is a tech show held in Las Vegas. So they come up with this new range of laptops that come with their latest Intel processors that promise a leap of performance. And the company has also announced that they are going to launch a platform for handheld video game devices this year. I think Intel is an interesting company, given that it has run really, really hard last year, outperforming the likes of NVIDIA and AMD because of several tailwinds. One is the 10% stake by the US government to support the homegrown chip production, and also the $5 billion partnership with NVIDIA to strengthen its foundry business ambitions. I think this is going to be another driving force for the company to run this year. And given the AI rally broadly in the market, the more companies joining the competition, the better, because it will bring up the productivity and also drive progress from here.
Okay, and finally, key question, what do you see as the main investment themes for 2026?
Yeah, we do see three investment themes that could play out for 2026. Gold, I briefly touched on earlier, and another option for investors to leverage the price of gold is gold miners. A lot of the gold miners has still been undervalued compared to historical averages, and their balance sheet have been quite strong, and a lot of the disciplined cash flow management has gone in there. So gold miners could be another strong performer in 2026. And secondly, we do see market leadership shifting out of the mega cap US tech companies to other regions of the globe, such as Europe, parts of Asia, and emerging markets has been getting a lot of attention and traction because the valuation and fundamentals are more attractive there. And lastly, we might see a rotation going into quality companies again. Last year in 2025, it was pretty interesting because both growth companies as well as value companies have outperformed, which is usually not the case because it is usually an yin and yang dynamic between the two factors. But for value companies last year, it has grown quite strongly because of the improved earnings outlook on the back of strong economic growth, whereas for growth companies, they have also grown because of the valuation multiple expansion and also the interest rate grinding lower. But this year, we are already seeing the quality companies' valuation premium coming down to historical averages from the peak back in 2024. So this could be the year for a factor of quality.
That is Alice Shen there from Van Eck, and she wraps up the podcast for this Wednesday. Give it a rating or review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Click subscribe and catch up tomorrow.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.